So did it work?
Yep.
Cool.
All right. You're doing the thing, right? Jake.
I'm doing the thing.
I love it when you do the thing. The thing. My wife.
Okay. Let's, count down. 3, 2. Welcome back, film enthusiasts, to another riveting episode of the Fantastic Mr. Podcast. Tonight, myself, Justin, and Zach will be delving into the deep realms of history and imagination as we explore the impact of the nuclear bomb on Eastern and Western cinema. Strap in as we dissect the parallels between the highly successful films Oppenheimer and Godzilla Minus One and their franchises. Get ready for an explosive discussion on how these cinematic masterpieces reflect the enduring legacy of one of humanity's most pivotal moments.
Lovely.
Nice. So, quick question. Is it a nuclear bomb? Aren't they both atom bombs that created Godzilla? Isn't that right, Zach? Atom bomb? Because nuclear's way more... Or, sorry, atomic bomb. I said atom bomb. I don't know if there's a difference, but thing. It's atomic bomb, yeah. But nuclear's way more powerful, right?
I mean, they're...
Or are they?
We should Google this before we dive into it.
Yeah.
I guess we should.
Yeah, because...
First, I thought they were the same thing.
I could be wrong. That's why I asked. I wanted to make sure.
Let's see. Atomic bomb. The bomb and nuclear bombs are powerful weapons.
They're nuclear weapons is the encompassing umbrella term.
Gotcha.
Like, for example, the hydrogen bomb and the atomic...
I think they're just different avenues or strategies to get to the same result, which is splitting that atom.
Yeah.
Okay.
So because they even discussed that in Oppenheimer of that one dissenting scientist. He wanted to go the H bomb, or the hydrogen.
Hydrogen. Bomb. Yeah. I want a movie about that guy now. I forgot his name.
It's like Tesla. Let's get a movie like Tesla and what? Tesla, not Tesla, the car, of course, but, you know, the electricity.
I wanted Elon Musk in there, dude. Who would play Elon Musk if we did a show with him?
Oh, I know a perfect actor.
Like Matt Damon?
That one. He's in that movie currently, or that's going to be coming out about that. You've seen the previews. It's like the scary house. They're trapped inside, and there's like this little girl that is dancing, and she's a vampire.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
The dude looks exactly like Elon Musk.
Yeah,
they even pan to him when there's some narrative, like some voiceover saying about rich people, and like I think they just jokingly like went over to him because he looks like Elon Musk, and you're supposed to make that connection, rich billionaire.
You know who I'd want to play Elon Musk? Elon Tusk.
Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Or Musk probably would want to play himself, much of an ego he is.
Yeah. He was on the Big Bang Theory. I've been rewatching the Big Bang Theory, and he was on an episode. I was like, man, really? You are not a good actor, yeah.
Before he was crazy?
Before he was a lot. Well, I mean, like, he had created.
I was crazy once.
He had created SpaceX and stuff. He had known Twitter at this point. But I was like, God, you're so like, he's just so dull when he's acting, even on Rick and Morty. But he says funny things on Rick and Morty. So it's like,
yeah, well, they write stuff for him.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. But like, it kind of makes up for it. But he's still not a good actor. Anyway, let's get to the matter at hand.
So Oppenheimer and Godzilla Minus One are they were both highly anticipated, highly successful releases. Let's just jump right into it. What do you guys think?
Godzilla Minus One. Oh, I thought you were going to ask which one we liked better.
Let's start with that. Which movie do you guys like better?
Godzilla Minus One.
Well, before,
I like them both for different reasons. If I had to choose, I'd probably choose Oppenheimer. If I had to like be on an island
and you had to watch one or the other.
Yeah, it'd be Oppenheimer. It's more of a grand, fulfilling experience for me.
So I guess
it's probably a surprising answer for you guys because you know how much I love Godzilla.
And I was going to say as a surprising answer for me because I have never followed Godzilla at all up until Godzilla Minus One, but I would have to say my favorite is Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, it's just a lot more nostalgic and stuff for me. Oppenheimer's cool, but if I had to choose, it'd be Godzilla.
Why is that? Talk to me about it.
I understand Godzilla a little more, like the movie. Like, I guess if I brought Oppenheimer, I would grow to understand it because, you know, like there were parts in there that, like, and I can't recite to you what parts they were. It's been a minute since I've seen it, but there were parts in there that I was like, what the F is going on? But then there were more parts that I was like, okay, this is fine. But, you know, if I brought Oppenheimer with me, I could get to know it and understand it better. But I don't know. I just like Godzilla. I just like it. And like in Godzilla Minus One, he is like back to formula Godzilla. You know, he's not running down the city with King Kong and he's not helping, you know, humans out and all this stuff. And he's just like, I'm pissed. I have no reason why I'm pissed, but I'm going to destroy everything in my path, kind of Godzilla. And so, I don't know, I just liked it. That's from Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man with Back to Formula.
See, and Zach, what about you? Why do you choose Oppenheimer over Godzilla?
Again, it's a hard line to divide, really, for me, because both take place in around the World War II era. I mean, specifically, Godzilla Minus One, it starts off in the final days of World War II as the kamikaze pilot who is disgraced by his comrades because as a kamikaze pilot, you're told to, with honor, crash into the enemy, being the Americans, but he decides not to. And so you have this moral division in the mind of this pilot, which was abnormal for the time. I'm a big World War II guy. So it's not like every Japanese person that was in the military during World War II believed in the certain philosophy of, you know, taking your own life in the name of the empire, the emperor.
I was going to say the empire and the emperor.
Yeah. But I don't know. And then it also takes place in post-World War II, obviously, going back to the old days of Godzilla, back when it came out in the 50s. And going to Oppenheimer, obviously, World War II, we're in the middle of a war that has been going on for some time, and Japan is not backing down. And they consider and weigh the options of what would be more costly for the Allies to do a land invasion and incur more deaths, presumably, on both sides, being the Japanese civilians and whoever participates in the Allied invasion of Japan, or just consider the big massive threat of this device that can cause destruction in the blink of an eye and unfortunately lead to the instant deaths of, you know, tens of thousands. But I just, as a big World War II guy that reads lots of books and likes to research and watches documentaries, I felt like it was more appealing to me just because of the fact that I didn't really know too much about Robert Oppenheimer, just heard about him. Where I grew up in Eastern Washington State, there's a place called Hanford, and it is mentioned in the movie. I don't remember when they have the map of different places that are producing plutonium for the bombs that were, you know, not only utilized for the bomb that was dropped in New Mexico for the Trinity test, but for the bomb that was dropped in World War II, both. So where I grew up in Hanford, it was a part of the Manhattan Project, and they produced plutonium for the bomb that was dropped on Nagasaki, which was the second bomb, the bomb to end World War II. So I think for me, the kind of that personal-ish connection to ideas I've already known about made me more interested in Oppenheimer. And plus, and it's also very hard to compete in terms of the scores. You know, I'm a big Akira Ifukube fan. He's the known for the wonderful traditional Godzilla music that you heard reorchestrated in Minus One. And then they use them like the main Godzilla march, and then they use some themes from Godzilla versus Mothra and Godzilla versus King Kong from 60. Early 60s, so I was able to identify those themes. But then you have Oppenheimer. I don't know off the top of my head the name of the conductor or the composer, but that music was fantastic. Very, I think of with a lot of the movies that Christopher Nolan does, he has lots of ambient, wide sweeping, take your breath away type soundtracks. It's kind of hard to describe, but I just love the visual and musical pairing, and it just created this grand experience as you're watching the creation of the bomb and all the people that it took to create it, and you're seeing it through the eyes, through the lens of Oppenheimer. People complained about why didn't we get to see the destruction in Japan, and I don't know if it was explicitly stated, but by Nolan, but I think. It was meant to be seen, the story is meant to be seen through Oppenheimer, not through the Japanese. I think it would have been kind of jarring to suddenly just go to Japan and see the bomb drop. Mm-hmm. That's just me. That's why we had the illustration of that moment when Oppenheimer's completed his celebratory speech after hearing what happened over the radio of the bombs being dropped. And then all those people, all the supporters in New Mexico in that little home or whatever with that little facility, and then there's like that visual representation of maybe of what the Japanese people were going through, and that was like one of the grueling, disturbing scenes in my opinion. So I think I appreciate the complexity of visuals combined with the music in Oppenheimer, whereas Godzilla Minus One was more straightforward, consumable. Yes, I love Godzilla, but Oppenheimer is a movie that makes you think, and I like to think a little bit more.
Very good.
Very good answer.
End of episode. Just kidding.
Yeah, goodness.
what for you guys, I guess when it comes to Minus One, I guess what was your first exposure to Godzilla? We might have touched on it in the past, but for you, Jake, what was the first Godzilla movie you saw? I'm guessing it's going to be Roland Emmerich's 1998 with Matthew Broderick singing in the rain in the beginning, and there's the worms everywhere.
My first Godzilla, Minus One.
Minus One.
He said that's the first time he's ever watched a Godzilla movie.
Yeah, this is the first Godzilla.
I swear you've like the movie through and through.
I have seen a little clip of I don't know
the 1990
a modern one. I don't know what year it's from. It's like Godzilla with babies or something like that. But I don't consider that an experience. That was like my parents watching it on TBS, and I was just
little clips
in the room.
Yeah.
I don't consider that a real experience. That's like, it's like when you fly internationally and you touch down in like Paris airport before you go someplace else. You're like, oh, I was in
Paris.
You're like, no, you weren't. You were in like, you know, aisle D5. The next plane. You were not in Paris. So I kind of follow that thinking when it comes to experiencing things.
Did you know originally what Godzilla symbolized before going into
yes.
Minus
yes,
One?
I was aware that, you know, Godzilla was a representation of kind of the fear and destruction and horror that was caused to the Japanese people in the representation of Godzilla as the nuclear bomb, essentially. So, yes, I was aware of that. Outside of that, I really haven't paid attention to it. It was like the black and white ones, the original ones, you know, growing up.
You saw the black and white one, the original growing up recently, right? You saw the 54, the Japanese version, right? What did you think about that?
I haven't seen that one. The only one that I've seen is Minus One. I'm going to go back and watch the original ones now. But I actually wanted...
You sent me a screenshot of the 54 one. Remember?
I sent you
a messenger. Yeah, you took a picture of your screen. It's like, you asked a question. This looks good or something. This is on streaming. It was the 54.
Oh, you're right. I was asking you guys whether I should watch that first before I see the minus one, which I decided not to because I wanted my first experience with Godzilla to kind of be this with the modern version. I was aware that it was a reboot, essentially. It was a modernized reboot of the first one. And I had already bought tickets for that, and I didn't want to essentially spoil myself. I didn't know how closely it was gonna retain to the original story. I didn't want to have any preconceived notions of what Godzilla was or what it was supposed to be about.
Yeah,
So
I'd say
I just went in blind.
54 is a lot more depressing, I'd say, and for many reasons. The Japanese version, for sure. I'm not gonna just basic synopsis. I mean, it's more of an even more of a on the nose, anti-war, anti-nuclear, movie. But it's a great film. And then there's the Americanized version, which I grew up watching with Raymond Burr playing like the lone American journalist who witnesses the Godzilla destroying Tokyo.
Does
But
that actually change the narrative at all, or is it just like, oh, here's
I'd say no,
American?
I think it does a little bit. I think the American edit, it doesn't hammer home as deeply the message of anti-nuclear war and the fact that no, this is why we are here today. Just after the war, tests being conducted and Godzilla being made, but the American version, it doesn't. It takes away certain scenes, I believe.
Really?
And yeah, so that's one of the only pet peeves of mine. But it's not a major deal. I still enjoy Raymond Burr's added scenes. But it's kind of jarring at times because you could tell when there's added scenes, like in the middle of what you probably will remember as the Japanese version. But yeah, they're both. I mean, it's the Hallmark Godzilla movie. I mean, the Gojira or Godzilla, King of the Monsters. It was kind of the American title. And so yeah, so you'll have to see it one day. But yeah, it's the most. It's up there. I think probably number one for me, and then minus one's probably number two as far as Godzilla movies.
Do you think the addition of the American journalist and the fact that they removed some scenes of the original Godzilla would have to do with the fact that, we're the ones that dropped the bomb on them? I,
Probably a
you know, I,
studio decision, probably, yeah.
yeah, well, I've noticed, and this is particularly apparent when you look at Eastern and Western media, where a lot of things in our culture. When someone comes in contact with like nuclear waste or material of a certain power, they generally end up being like a superhero. Whereas over in Eastern culture and media, you get films and stories like Godzilla, where it's this destructive force. Do you feel that like maybe that was one of the first iterations of the divide between Eastern and Western media and how we view, that nuclear event? Or do you think it's something different?
I think it's a little bit of showcasing the divide in different cultures and portraying nuclear power for sure. As another example, Godzilla 1984 and then 85 in America, another, I guess you could call it the direct sequel to, of sorts to, it's not, but in terms of continuity, sequel to 1954, but once again in the American version, Raymond Burr, old man this time, comes back. And anyways, in the American version of Godzilla 84 or 85, he there they portray the Soviets, because we're in the middle of the Cold War, that the kind of the I'd say not the height, but it was the tensions were quite up there in the 80s. But anyways, the American version made the Russians or the Soviets at the time come across as these villains of sorts, and the reason for trying to activate a nuclear missile, whereas in the Japanese version they were kind of the not kind of like the mediator or the in-betweener trying to stop a missile from launching. So that was a very stark difference in both.
That's propaganda.
Yeah, it is. And in the movie, it changes the feeling of what's going on in this international situation. Godzilla's back, and you have the Russians in the middle, the Japanese, and the Americans are trying to figure out what to do. And you have the Soviets, from the Japanese perspective, not these power-hungry people, but the American media at the time especially were, yes, that's how they are. They want to blow us up. So,
wow.
That's another example.
Well, that's a great, one of my next questions was going to be, what differences were there between Eastern and Western media and how they depicted Godzilla, but that's an incredible answer already. Because Justin, you had said how a lot of the modern Godzilla movies are more just like action flicks, that he's like helping out humans, he's fighting Godzilla and other monsters and such. Whereas, Zach, you're talking about him just being a monster.
Well, that's
a symbol of evil and nuclear symbolism versus the more actiony savior of the day type of guy, which we're kind of seeing a rebirth with the MonsterVerse, which was, they did this during the 60s, 70s with the more child-friendly Godzilla movies, but we're back with it, I think, with MonsterVerse. I think you've seen the trailers of the next Godzilla King Kong movie, and you see Kong and Godzilla coming out of the ground and running together as if it's this Marvel movie. People are opposed to that, but I guess you guys haven't seen the Showa era of Godzilla movies, where Godzilla is literally flying around using his own breath and like kicking people and throwing branches down King Kong's throat. So that's how I respond to those people.
Go ahead, Justin.
My first experience with Godzilla was King Kong versus Godzilla. I didn't get to say it earlier, so I'm saying it now.
And there's another example, Justin. There's a difference between the Japanese and American version as far as the portrayal of the ending.
I didn't realize there were two versions. We just had it on VHS and I watched it a lot. I remember that one, and I vaguely remember seeing Mechagodzilla. Oh no, Mecha King Kong. In one movie, but I don't remember which movie that was. But I do remember seeing it. But I mostly watched King Kong versus Godzilla, and actually own it on Blu-ray. I found it, I think, at like Best Buy or something for $5. I was like, I'll take it. Actually, I think I got it at Walmart. But that was the first time I experienced Godzilla until the 1998 came out. I remember seeing that. And now I watched it again as an adult. And I was like, man, it's not good. it's kind of, because he's not like a dinosaur type monster like he is. He's more like an iguana, or she's more like an iguana, because they portray her as a woman who lays eggs underground. And anyway, then of course, I remember when Godzilla 2000 was, the trailers were playing for Godzilla 2000, and I was like, oh, sweet, another Godzilla movie. And I think we've talked about this, where people thought it was another like American version type movie. And then I remember seeing it on TV, and I stopped and I started watching it, and it was the Japanese, like it's a Japanese movie. And I was like, oh, screw this. And I kept moving. I kept like moved on, because I was probably like 12 years old, so I wasn't about to watch any foreign film.
But wasn't it dubbed, the English dub on TV?
I don't think it was. And if it was, then even the side of like being like, oh, it's still a foreign film, because you can tell, because that's kind of how I feel with live action dubbed movies now, is I don't want to watch them, because it's like this guy moving his mouth, and then this Asian person moving their mouth, and then this white guy. It's like, hello, how are you? And it's like, no, I don't want to do this. So anyway, then just that. And then, of course, the MonsterVerse, I'm still into MonsterVerse. Like, I love it. Don't get me wrong. But, oh, and I watched the cartoon as a kid. I did watch the cartoon
Hanna-Barbera.
Yes, the Godzilla cartoon as a kid. I don't remember when it came out, but I remember being pretty young, and it was Godzilla, and it was like this group of kids that like worked out in the ocean, I think. I don't really remember. But anyway, they somehow, I forget how, but they call Godzilla when they need him, and he comes out of the sea and like goes and defeats whatever thing is attacking the city in that at that time. And he had this like little sidekick named Godzuki, and it was really weird, but I watched it all the freaking time. I loved that show. I wish I could
Godzuki
sing
sounds
this.
like an anime character.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's Godzuki, and he's like this bumbling little Godzilla that has these
Like
tiny
comedic relief.
wings. Yeah, it was funny to watch. He didn't actually come out of the sea. He was always with their group of people. Like he was just kind of
Like
their
their
pet.
pet.
Yeah, until Godzilla came out, and then he's like goes and defeats everybody, and then goes back into the water. I'm like, all right, but I did like that show a lot. I wish I could sing the theme song for you right now, but I can't.
Why not?
I'm
Why
not
not?
taking it because, plus, I don't remember the whole thing. I don't remember. I just remember kind of like the cadence, and especially when Godzuki is in the title.
Switching over from Godzilla to Oppenheimer, what did you guys think of the way Christopher Nolan put that film together with color portions, black and white portions, his non-linear storytelling aspect, which he seems to implement in a lot of his films these days? What did you guys think of the structure and formatting of Oppenheimer?
What, Justin?
Yeah, I guess I can go. I mean, it was fine. I like black and white sequences. I like black and white things. Like I saw Godzilla minus one, and then I saw Godzilla minus one minus color, you know, and it was awesome. So I'm down. I'm always down for black and white, and I do like the idea of it being kind of a flashback type scenario. Some of it was hard to follow, like, and there was just so many characters in this movie that I'm like, who's that? Who's that? Okay, this is so and so. Okay, great. You know, and you're just like, but and it's like all familiar faces. Every single one of them you've seen before. Including Josh Hartnett, which I thought was that blew my freaking mind because I didn't recognize him because I knew Josh
Oh, yeah,
Hartnett.
bring Drake or Josh.
Yeah, well, you say Drake and
Josh.
Josh?
Yeah, he's in Drake and Josh.
No, Josh Hartnett is an
Yeah.
actor from the early 2000s. He was in a lot of movies. Jake, you're thinking of Josh, oh
Heck.
man, Josh
You're
Peck.
right.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, you're right. He was in it. He
Yeah,
pressed the button.
Josh Peck
Yeah.
was in that movie.
I was gonna say that's what I was
But
thinking about.
I'm talking about Josh Hartnett. I don't remember who he played. He played one of the was he like a professor or something? Anyway, I'd have to look him up and like send you his like what he played on the movie, because like I didn't recognize him. The only reason I even know now is because my friend Josh was like, oh yeah, and Josh Hartnett, and I was like, where was Josh
Oh,
Hartnett?
Ernest Lawrence. He played Ernest Lawrence.
Okay, yeah, and I was like,
Other, yeah, the other, like the other half of Oppenheimer's team. He was running the radio, the radioactive lab at the
yeah.
university.
Okay. Yeah, he was in it. But see, the thing about Josh Hartnett is, and he's kind of been showing up a little bit lately, is he hasn't acted in years. Like he was a famous actor in the early 2000s and kind of a heartthrob, you know. And then he just like fell off the face of the earth until recently. He was in a movie with Aubrey Plaza, which I don't remember what it's called, but it's some sort of like spy movie. And then this. And like I didn't recognize him at all, but anyway, so yeah, some of it was sometimes hard to follow, but I did like the build up to the test of the atomic bomb, right? Like, and then like how accurate it was with the not the fallout, but like the back end of it, if you will. So like that it exploded, you watch it explode, there's no sound, and then all of a sudden, you know, like a minute or two later, it like blows through the whatever they're in, the bunker or whatever they're in. And like in the theater, it was loud and it was really cool. So yeah, like the sound, the music was great in Oppenheimer, like it was wonderful. And yeah, I mean, I like the build up, and I went to see The Wind Rises, which is a Studio Ghibli movie. And it's like the same format where like you're going through this person's life and you're seeing how he was raised and you know how different things that's going on in his life. And it kind of leads to the test flight of his first. He's like an aeronautical engineer, right? And it leads up to the test flight of his first plane. And it's like parallels are like astounding how similar these movies are. And I'm like wondering if, you know, Christopher Nolan got ideas from this movie because of just how similar they are. It's just about one guy, and you know, the whole time he's wanting to create his own plane, and he finally does, and then that's the end of the movie. Crazy.
That's brutal.
Interesting. It's another correlation between the Eastern and West
Yeah, and
Eastern
yeah.
media.
It was but anyway, yeah, I liked Oppenheimer, and I need to watch it again. Like Zach says, thinker, and I do enjoy thinking. Don't get me wrong, but you know, if I had to pick one or the other right now, it would be Godzilla. But I think it's because that is the movie I saw the most recent, and I really, really, really loved. But it is a lot more straightforward. I would agree with you there. It's a lot more straightforward than Oppenheimer is. Like any of Christopher Nolan's movies, it seems like you got to really pay attention or watch it several times.
You got to really pay attention. Yeah, I really liked Godzilla Minus One, and I saw it in the minus color as well. I figured like if I'm gonna watch Godzilla for the first time, I might as well like pay homage to the OG and watch it in black and white. And I honestly can't imagine seeing that movie in color. I can't imagine what it would be like. I feel like it would be a disservice to see it in color because the black and white fit the tone and story so well. And that was in the one of the reasons that I loved Minus One so much was because it was so emotionally driving. If we had to compare the two, I would say Oppenheimer was like, as you said, a very intellectually driven film, whereas Godzilla Minus One was a very like emotionally driven film. It's the narrative piece of it was honestly quite simple, but the heart that the characters put into it and the great representation of the feelings and struggles they're going through were represented very well with almost the backdrop of Godzilla. Like it really wasn't about Godzilla. It was just the catalyst for everything that was going on in the film.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, I listen to IGN Game Scoop, and sometimes I talk about movies. And the host of the show said something that was interesting, and it's not very long. Just that, like, this Godzilla did it right, where they have human characters and they have Godzilla character, and they did both elements right. Whereas the American version struggled to do that on either side, it seems. That's all I had to say about that.
They're gonna make Godzilla like I don't understand. Like they just make Godzilla like a good guy, like on the team.
Well, yeah, because even in the first one, the first legendary version, which is the MonsterVerse, you know, he defeats the Mudos, and it's like, and then he just goes back into the sea. And I'm like, there's no way a giant radioactive monster would just be like, all right, well, I'm gonna go back into the sea now.
My job's done.
Yeah, like no, and I just don't. It doesn't. I mean, I think what I really like about those movies is just the presence of monsters on screen. Like when it comes to the American versions, because the human stories aren't interesting at all. You're just like, I just
No.
need Godzilla, please. I'm okay with
Yeah, like
Godzilla and King Kong, and I'm okay with Godzilla and King Ghidorah. Like, give me monsters, please. If you're gonna not give me a good human story, just give me more monsters. Whereas this one, Godzilla Minus One, just I think really knocked it out of the park with the human story, the human element, and the Godzilla element.
Yeah, like,
Yeah.
so like the modern films, the human characters are like the chip for the like case. So they're like the delivery method for the monster action, whereas Minus One, they're the meat, and it's
Oh
and Godzilla is a supporting piece to that.
yeah. But even as a supporting piece, he's awesome and he looks great. You know, it's just like you don't with Godzilla, you don't have to do all this let's befriend him with God, with King Kong, and now they gotta defeat a tribe of giant monkeys. I'm like, dude, you don't have to do all that with Godzilla. He is Godzilla. Like, put him on screen and have him fight something, and people will enjoy it. That's all you got to do. But, you know, Americans, they're so focused on story, and they need to make sure the story goes a certain way, I guess. Mm-hmm. That they do it, they think about it so much that it screws it up. Whereas, like, the Minus One, the story was interesting, and it wasn't like, I don't know, it didn't seem like there was much thought put into it. You have a kamikaze pilot that didn't want to fulfill his purpose, and then he gets to fulfill his purpose without having to die. Boom, done. You know what I mean? Whereas the other ones, I don't even really remember the human stories in the other ones.
I think for the legendary Godzilla movie, the first one, was it 2014?
Yeah, I think so.
I enjoyed the human element with Bryan Cranston's character, and
yeah, but
until something happened to him, and then after that, I didn't care about anyone else.
Spoiler alert: he dies. Okay, 2014, yeah. Zach.
But he was the best actor.
Exactly, he was. You know, it would have been more interesting if he stayed in the movie. But then you have, you know, Aaron Taylor Johnson and Elizabeth Olsen, who are great actors, but you know their story wasn't. I mean, what was his story? He needed to get back home, right? It's like, okay, that's fine.
And it became a little bit too on the nose for me with, like, the America rah-rah military for me. It just felt too much like that. But I wish they should have kept Godzilla just destroying the city or just cities, and instead of having the Muto creatures to give it an excuse to say, oh, Godzilla, maybe he's not bad after all. Maybe we could have had just Godzilla for the first movie, and then the sequel, perhaps they could introduce the crisis situation where Godzilla needs to save the day, so to speak.
Yeah, it makes more sense, too, because you have monsters that people know and already love, whereas the Mutos, they were created for that movie. It's like, who cares about these guys? Which I guess...
The organization is called Muto, so...
Well, the things are called Mutos. They're like massive unidentified terrestrial organisms or something like that. You're thinking of Hydra, yeah, almost at Hydra. What is that Monarch?
It's the Monarch. Yeah, that's the show that's out as well. I've not seen it, but I guess it's it's more focused on the human characters versus monsters, and people are up in arms over that.
That was the
you
same
can never be happy. It's like,
well, yeah, I know. That's another thing about Americans is they can't be happy with anything. That's another thing they mentioned in that same podcast was the host had watched Monarch, and he said, there's just too many humans. There's not enough monsters. I'm like, well, for one thing, it's a TV show. There's not, the budget's not as big. And two, I mean, it's just easier, like, cheaper, just more inexpensive to do these human characters than it is for Godzilla. I don't know. It's just, I only watched the first two episodes of that show, and I was like, okay, this is okay. But they do mention Mutos in that show as well. And then there's Monarch. Monarch, of course, is the company that.
Some people made that distinction kind of jokingly. I think Godzilla Minus One's the perfect movie to watch after. You watch Oppenheimer.
You know, I was thinking that when you guys started talking about it, I was totally thinking about that. I was like, oh my God, it could almost be like a spiritual sequel to Oppenheimer. Is like they dropped the atomic bomb, and then here comes Godzilla. And then there was Barbie.
That's kind of how I thought about it. And I honestly thought it'd be really funny if they did those as the double showing.
And it's Godzillenheimer. I need to trademark that name.
Yeah, it's Oppenheimer and then Godzilla immediately.
Well, I think it probably wouldn't go well with the maybe Japanese audiences for obvious reasons. I think there was already a controversy over the Barbenheimer social media craze because of the obviously the sentiment of what Japan had to go through. I don't know how it was received, Oppenheimer in Japan, but I think that would be an interesting thing to look into.
Yeah,
and their perception on how I guess that the lack of the Japanese representation in Oppenheimer, whether that was a pro or con for Japanese audiences. I'm sure there's people that agree with it and people that are like, well, why weren't we represented? Yes, it would show the brutality of what happened instead of showing Americans in a stylistic way.
Yeah, but I don't know if they would have went over well had they shown, because I don't did I know y'all mentioned this earlier. Did they show anything from Japan when they dropped after they dropped the bomb in Oppenheimer?
No.
Yeah,
no, they didn't show anything in Japan.
Yeah,
they didn't show explosions either.
Yeah, exactly. I bet that was a conscious decision by Christopher Nolan, where it's like, let's not show that.
Well, it's not about that. I think it was all from the, again, I think I already stated this, the Oppenheimer's, this movie was from his perception, from his viewpoint. So he wasn't there in Japan.
Oh yeah, I guess you're right.
Mm-hmm. That was the point. That's and I think fair. That was that was also possibly a great route to go. To
I agree.
Avoid anything blatant. But again, my curiosity wants to see a movie where the bombs, if the movie's about the bombs itself, not the man behind it necessarily. Mm-hmm. The story behind the pilots that dropped the bombs would be a great, interesting movie, and the what some of the pilots realized they did after they dropped it. Following orders, but the kind of the, I don't know, I've seen some interviews from some of the last pilots before they died, but some are like, yeah, this is what was necessary. Others weren't as straightforward with their response. So I think a movie about that would be interesting. Movie from the Japanese perspective. I think there's a movie called Hiroshima that it's an old black and white movie, and it's from the perspective of Japanese people and the fallout and how they try to come to terms with what just happened out of the blue.
Yeah. Is Oppenheimer streaming anywhere? Do we know?
I don't know.
It is. I believe it's streaming on Max.
Mm.
Oh, even better. I love Max. But I think Barbie and Oppenheimer are streaming on Max right now. You think Godzilla Minus One's going to stream on Max? Because it's got all the other... can we talk about Barbie real quick?
I take that back. I apologize. No. It's not on Max. It's on Peacock.
Okay. Did you say no, Zach?
I don't think Minus One's going to be on Max anytime soon. It's not even on DVD.
Yeah, you're right. I'm just thinking, like, in general, if it's good, because it has all the other Godzilla movies on there, as well as
maybe Studio one day,
because Toho does both those.
Yeah, anyway. I hope so. But I mean, I'm going to buy the physical version.
Oh yeah, I'm going to buy the physical. I actually need to get Oppenheimer as well. I do want to rewatch it. I think next week.
Yeah, I saw it. For the viewers out there, go ahead.
That's all. Go ahead.
No, for the viewers out there, I saw the. So there's one of 13 theaters in North America that plays the 70mm IMAX version.
Right now?
Film. No, back when.
Oh, just whenever. Out. Yeah. And yeah. I think the closest one was probably in your neck of the woods for us.
Yeah, in San Antonio. Let me tell you briefly the controversy surrounding it. There was numerous reports nationwide, including in Canada, of people watching the movie and suddenly the screen goes blank, or they're watching the film for several minutes without audio. And some theaters were more prepared than others with having an experienced projectionist on scene to take care of it. But in my case, thankfully I checked the website or got the email notifying me not to come to the theaters, because in the showing before mine, apparently people were upset that they just had traveling hours from like Houston or other big and little cities across Texas, or even out of state. One guy tweeted, I'd flown in from like the Midwest to come see Oppenheimer in the format that was intended to be seen in, yet we had these issues. So people are upset about that. So thankfully when I finally got to see it, like the following weekend, I had no issues. So that's the version that I think he's like, see it on the biggest effing screen possible or something. He said, use some profanity for sure, but he said, is the movie meant to be seen on the biggest screen possible and in this particular format? I saw it in a regular IMAX as well, which is great. But again, it wasn't like the end of this world if you didn't get to see it in that format. But I think it's one of the once in a lifetime type.
I was going to say,
for sure, for people.
I would have loved, I mean, like, honestly, in retrospect, I should have been like, hey, Zach, I'm coming down to watch this movie with you because I really want to see it in this format. because then they re-released it, and I was like, I swear to God, if it's in Texas, I'm going to go see it. And I don't think they brought the 70 millimeter. I know they re-released it in 70 millimeter, but not to Texas, I don't think. Of course, not in Arkansas. Like, there's no way that
of
would ever
not.
Happen.
Yeah. There are some great news stories. I don't know for which station. I think somewhere in the Midwest, but the reporter did a feature on the film for Oppenheimer and how it's assembled and everything. It's like, for those that are like interested in like what film's all about and like seeing how many miles of film it actually is. It was
I did see fact. I saw a picture of the reel. It was huge.
Yeah, the reel.
I think it was 3 miles.
Three miles.
That's imagine. Crazy. Like imagine. How the heck are you carrying that thing around? Like, what are they carrying it in? I mean, I know it's in a
In parts, just, perhaps. I don't know.
Like, it was a full like 60, 72 inch like in diameter. Like, it was
very large. It was cool though. I was like, man,
have you worked with film guys like at movie theaters?
Not at movie theaters. I do have some. So one of my coworkers has had a bunch of home movies on film. And some projectors, and I was like, oh my God, like, if you don't mind, I would love it if you brought it up here just so I can like play with the projectors. And so she did, and I didn't actually play with it at work. I brought it home and played with it, and it's just some 8 millimeter home movies, you know. Some of them are this big, and they're really like, it was really cool. I had to teach myself, well, I looked it up, but teach myself how to, you know, run the film through the projector and stuff like that. It was really cool.
A lost art form these days.
I was thinking about bringing it up to
myself. You remember
school.
Going to the movies like as a kid, and remember going to the theater as a kid and like hearing the film, or maybe I'm just maybe that's what
I went and saw. Digital. I went and saw a movie on film. I forgot what it was called, but I think Danny DeVito was in it. But I'm pretty sure it was on film because it looked like
Batman.
No, it looked like it looked like no, it looked like a. The movie had stopped, and it kind of looked like the film, like, burnt out, you know? Huh. And so it was really cool. I mean, now it was really cool. Back then, I was like, what the hell happened? Of course, now I'm like, I don't even remember what the movie was called. I don't really remember anything about the movie. I think I just went because it was something to do. Pretty sure I had money in the title. But.
Speaking of film, go back to Oppenheimer. Remember that scene where everyone, including Oppenheimer's, being shown what the bomb did to Japan, but we don't see the footage of it. Vaguely. It's like you're seeing Oppenheimer's reaction to that. Mm-hmm. I guess whether you remember it or not, I mean, what are your thoughts on that, like, decision just to focus on the father of the
like
bomb
watching.
Versus, you know, seeing what he's seen.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a little more powerful. It's like watching a reaction video kind of, you know, except for, reaction videos on like TikTok are stupid, you know, because who cares? But like to see it with this when it's, you know, a movie and stuff, I think it's probably a little more powerful to watch him react to it because, you know, he created it and, you know, it was his invention that caused the damage. So if he showed some sort of remorse or whatever on his face, then, you know, it's got to be pretty bad.
I really liked it, and I liked the fact that they put that in there because for me it drew parallels with some documentary footage that I saw before where they showed Nazis the effect of Auschwitz. They had Nazis who were not in the camps shown footage of the camps, and there's a very similar perspective of where. For us, we don't see what they're looking at, but it's a whole theater of these Nazis looking at the devastation and their work in Auschwitz and in the camps. And so I found the parallels very, very interesting as those Nazi members were shown the devastation that they wrought. Oppenheimer and his team are shown the devastation that we wrought. You know, the motivations behind the two are very different, but ultimately the devastation is, you know, and the loss of life is very similar.
Yeah.
And so I felt that was a very interesting parallel. And I wonder if Nolan did that kind of intentionally. But it, you know, it is a way of holding Oppenheimer and an extension of the United States accountable for the actions that we did.
Yeah, I remember that one scene, the political guy, they're having the conversation, Oppenheimer's in the room, is like, not this city, I vacation there with my wife for something, or for the honeymoon. I forgot what he said exactly.
Yeah.
It was like very flippant in the middle of this discussion.
I think that was the president.
No, it wasn't Truman. It was someone else. But that was an interesting scene. Was there like talking about which city, what's the death toll if we were to activate the bomb on this city? Or, and then this guy is like, oh, yeah, not this city. It's because, yeah, I want a vacation there in the future. But what do you guys think? Did you guys realize that was Gary Oldman as President Truman, Harry Truman?
I said that was the president.
No, I'm talking about the scene before. I don't think that was the president. Not that scene where he's talking to Oppenheimer and calls him a crybaby.
No, I'm not talking about that.
I don't think it was that. No, it definitely wasn't Truman before, because the first time we see Truman is when at the end, when he's talking with Oppenheimer one on one, and he's like, "I'm getting the blame. You're not." It's like, but I was amazed that was even Oldman. I was like, it looks a little bit like his prosthetics as Winston Churchill from The Darkest Hour. But after I looked him up, like, who played the president? Because I'm always interested who plays presidents, especially ones from JFK days and World War II. I was amazed. Did you guys know that was Oldman before going into the movie?
Not before. No. I mean, I did recognize him.
No, yeah.
Oh, you did? Mm. Yeah, no, I didn't off the top.
I don't know if I recognize him or not. I don't really remember. But Oldman's good at, he's kind of like a good master of disguise, if you will. You know, mm-hmm. He's good at that stuff. It's like Colin Farrell and Penguin. I was like, there's no way that's freaking Colin Farrell. But my goodness.
A lot of prosthetics on it, though. Yeah,
I know. But still, like, you could still tell through his acting, but I guess not. Depending on how good you are, I guess Colin Farrell's a better actor than I thought, because I've never cared for him until that and Banshees of Inisherin.
Continuing our long tradition Bullseye. Of insulting actors on our podcast.
Well, it's not like they listen. But then I could be wrong.
They might be on our show one day.
Do you guys feel the representation of Oppenheimer potentially glorified his position or what we did in the movie? Or do you feel like this was kind of do you guys feel like this was a glorification of what we did and his role in it, or something else?
I don't think so. I'm not really sure why, but I don't think it was a glorification. It's more just like, this is what happened kind of thing.
Yeah. I know on online there was a lot of outcry that kind of in the same vein of Joker or any other, broken character, there's always an outcry that this is a glorification or a praising of that character and their actions, as opposed to an accurate representation or a cautionary tale. Yeah. Do you guys feel like that this was follows that, or this was accurately done? Like, Christopher Nolan did a good job just stating the facts.
Yeah, I mean, I think what was the reasoning for the color versus black and white? I thought one was supposed to be like absolutely true for the most part, and the other color was for like, yeah, okay, there's some room for interpretation there. I forgot which color was for which meaning.
Got my theories on it, on why.
What are your theories?
So my theory on that basically is the color was Oppenheimer's intention and meaning. It was the emotional aspect of the character, the reason for doing it, the struggles that he was facing. It was the heart, you know, like this, the actual, like the Oppenheimer's truth. Whereas the black and white was an outside perspective, almost like, you know, history is written in black and white. And that's kind of how I took that, is the black and white portions was not necessarily the truth, the objective truth, but it was the
truth as represented by history, or their intention for him to be painted up as history. The black and white portions mainly centered around his relationship with Downey's character. And so I actually saw a lot of the black and white portions to being these situations as viewed through Downey's perspective, as opposed to an accurate representation. It was more of like the behind the scenes of what's going on, whereas the color was like what was happening from Oppenheimer's perspective. I don't think either one of them represented truth. Say, I think one was just Oppenheimer's perspective with the information or knowledge he had versus an outsider's perspective or a third party's perspective.
Also, yeah, I agree.
Also, Downey's intentions, I think it also kind of represented Downey's intentions of the fact that he ultimately was trying to frame Oppenheimer, at least, you know, as represented by the movie. And so I think that kind of maybe could have represented the coldness or the intellectual, you know, logical, manipulative aspect of Downey's character, as opposed to the heart and soul and feeling of Oppenheimer's. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Louis Strauss, the guy that was played by Robert Downey Jr., he's trying to bring down Oppenheimer. And I think it was excellently portrayed by RDJ. You don't see many serious roles like that from him these days. So it was nice to see him in that light.
Yeah, I mean, why should he? He's got all the money in the world from Avengers. He can just do whatever he wants. So it is nice to see that he signed on for something like this.
Absolutely. And Alden, I don't know if it was Alden Ehrenreich, kind of played his kind of right-hand man for a time, then kind of turned on him at the end. You know who Alden Ehrenreich is. He's played a Solo in the Solo Star Wars story.
That's where I saw him. Okay. Totally. I was trying to figure out where I knew him from when I was watching that. I was like, is he from the Avengers? Is he from something? I knew it was a Disney something.
Star Wars.
Cool. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up this session. I don't. Do you guys have any last questions or things you want to talk about?
Well, I think I am going to rewatch Oppenheimer just because I've seen Godzilla twice. And so it's only fair that I see Oppenheimer twice. I put it on my Amazon wish list. So I think when I get paid, I'm going to go ahead and buy it and try to watch it sometime. And speaking of Star Wars, very soon I'm going to marathon all 9 movies.
It's going to be brutal.
It's going to be a day.
Especially the sequel trilogy.
Yeah, well, and the prequel trilogy. But,
prequels?
Know,
those are the
prequels
have actually aged well, despite people's badgering. At least it feels like Star Wars.
Well, yeah, what I was going to say was they get a lot of flack that I don't think it deserves. I mean, there are moments in there where you're like, okay, Anakin, shut up. But for the most part, I mean, they're fine movies. And I enjoy the whole like political aspect of it. But anyway, that's another conversation for another day. We've done Star Wars before. Yeah.
So, all right. Is there if there was an opportunity for future, you know, exploration of either of these topics, what do you guys want to see from the next Godzilla film? What would you want Nolan to explore in, you know, let's say this atomic universe? What would you guys want to see?
I don't really don't care to see, like, like, as far as Godzilla goes, I want another Godzilla sequel. As far as Christopher Nolan goes, I don't really care what he does. He's good at pretty much any, like, most of the movies that I've seen of his are always good. So it's just like, I don't care to kind of speculate or talk about, like, what I would like to see come out of Nolan, just that he keeps doing his thing, you know?
He's unpredictable.
Then, maybe not Nolan. Okay, so maybe not Nolan in particular, but if there were other historical events or individuals that you would like to see represented in this film style,
in film?
I don't know.
What would you want to see?
No idea off the top of my head, honestly.
I think for me, probably World War II from the days when the U.S. was not involved, but up until Pearl Harbor occurred, but not from the perspective of soldiers or the military, but from the perspective of what was going on in Washington and their reluctance to help the Allies until they were attacked, and then dive into kind of the politics of what brought the United States into the war, obviously from Pearl Harbor. And then they're like, okay, now we're in it. We were attacked. So, and then I think, so obviously it would be from Franklin Delano Roosevelt's perspective. So I'd like to see great.
Oh, that would be interesting.
I think Gary Oldman would be good. And also explore, I think Gary Oldman could also play the FDR. He had polio, and you know, he was, for the most part, had difficulties, you know, moving around, well, standing.
He was always shown seated.
Yeah,
they did that on purpose.
So I think that would be a great movie. Maybe, I mean, the focus would be FDR's perspective, but with other like political characters as well.
Yeah, I think that I would watch that. I mean, there's a movie about Harry Truman's perspective, so why not FDR?
Yeah,
like, come on.
And when it comes to Godzilla, I think Toho needs to continue this, do a sequel directly to Minus One, because Toho is known, it seems like, to just do one-offs. But Shin Godzilla came out some years ago, and I don't think they're going to be doing a direct sequel to that. So I'm hoping they're able to capitalize off of the success of Godzilla Minus One and continue the story. Because we do see the wife or the girlfriend, the love interest, you know, survive in the hospital, and see on her neck some type of mysterious marking, and it's probably like, I don't know, I'm guessing like the radiation, the impacts left by Godzilla's atomic breath. So I'd like to see what happens, not specifically with those two characters again, but you could go off of like what society after what happened has been going through, how are people adapting and recovering? Has it resulted in people, you know, dying similarly to how people died years after the bombs were dropped in Japan to end World War II? So it'd be kind of interesting. Do we want to see Godzilla with an enemy or an ally, perhaps? Maybe, I don't know. But I think it would be appropriate to introduce a different monster, but then again, you're going to take away from that serious aspect that made Minus One what it is, and that kind of that symbolism. So if you know, dive into the whole, all right, we're just doing the monster thing now and other characters, I think you kind of, you're going to lose people. But if they could,
I mean, could they
do it in the right way, they could.
Can they not just reboot like the second, because like if this is the first, if this is the reboot of the first Godzilla, could they not just remodernize the second Godzilla and follow that?
You could take aspects, but again, the Godzilla's Minus One's pretty different than.
Yeah. Also,
it's very, there's a lot of characters like Mr. Sarazawa, who's like the creator of the oxygen destroyer in 54. Like, he's not even a character in this.
Yeah, and exactly.
That one was more about Godzilla in a way. It was a good hefty dough. You got more Godzilla in that movie than Minus One.
And not only that, but Minus One doesn't just set it up as a sequel, a direct sequel with the neck veins, you know, because like even whenever he like breaks apart at the end, you see his like body parts or whatever starting to regenerate again.
I don't know. Like, I couldn't tell if that was like his heart or his
brain. Yeah, I think it might have been his heart or something. I'm not really sure, but it was just like a piece, and it started regenerating. So my guess is it's going to take some time to regenerate, and then he's going to show up again later, and then
looking like, different.
Oh my god! Yeah, and he's going to have pink scales. And...
Well, he had pink scales in Godzilla 2000.
Oh, did he? Oh,
purplish. You know, people are up in arms about the lead. Godzilla shown in the trailer for Kong and Godzilla, the new movie. I want to be like, actually, purple, pink scales, and everything else in Godzilla 2000.
That's,
I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, I want you to be that guy. I'll be that
But
guy.
I think that's good that we have the monster legendaries MonsterVerse and then Toho's more serious
Yeah, I
Godzilla
agree.
movies. It's
Yeah.
good to have both camps. Keep them happy.
It's like Marvel and DC. Well,
Yeah. We'll see what
post
happens with
or
James Gunn.
previous, well, meant, sorry, previous DC. It
Yeah,
was like,
DCU. Yeah.
yeah, Marvel was very, it was serious at moments, but it was a lot of comedy, a lot of action. And then there's DC that was very, very serious and a lot of action. And I preferred that, honestly. So,
The
anyway.
serious.
Yeah, I like the seriousness of DC, and it was just, I mean, yeah, there were jokes and stuff, but it was darker. It was just more serious. It was, I don't know. I liked it. We've talked about the whole James Gunn DCU and stuff like that, and I don't know. I'm interested to see where it goes. So anyway, great movies all around. Godzillaheimer. Nobody steal it. It's mine.
Godzilla. I mean, that's when they resurrect Oppenheimer and graft him onto a Godzilla creature. That'd
Yeah.
be neat. Okay. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening into this bombastic episode. Actually, you know what? That probably this felt like a lot more serious episode than that. I probably shouldn't say that.
I wasn't gonna say anything.
That doesn't feel like this fits. Guys, thank you for tuning into this wonderful episode with myself, Zach, and Justin. If you want to follow us on social media, we've got them. We've got Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And you can probably find us on just about anywhere an audio podcast can be found. Please, it'll help us if you liked us, don't like us, have an opinion to rate and write a review. It really does help us to know what our audience thinks and how we can improve the content that we make. I don't know where I was going with that, but we want your opinions. Talk to us.
Sounds great. All right, awesome. Well, thanks for listening, and we will see you. Hang on, before. Okay, and we'll see you next week.
Have a
And
fantastic day.
bye.